This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to find out how to volunteer, please contact LibriVox.org. Recording by Peter Yearsley. Secret Chambers and Hiding Places by Alan Fee. Chapter 8. Cavalier Hunting, etc. An old mansion in the precincts of the cathedral at Salisbury is said to have been a favourite hiding-place for fugitive cavaliers at the time of the Civil War. There is an inn immediately opposite this house, just outside the close, where the landlord, formerly a servant to the family who lived in the mansion, during the troublous times acted as a secret agent for those who were concealed, and proved invaluable by conveying messages, and in other ways aiding those royalists whose lives were in danger. There are still certain priests' holes in the house, but the most interesting hiding-place is situated in the most innocent-looking of summer-houses in the grounds. The interior of this little structure is wainscoted round with large panels, like most of the summer-houses, pavilions or music-rooms of the 17th century, and nothing uncommon or mysterious was discovered until some 25 years ago. By the merest accident, one of the panels was found to open, revealing what appeared to be an ordinary cupboard with shelves. Further investigations, however, proved its real object. By sliding one of the shelves out of the grooves into which it is fixed, a very narrow disguised door, a little over a foot in width, in the side of the cupboard and in the thickness of the wall, can be opened. This again reveals a narrow passage or staircase leading up to the joists above the ceiling, and thence to a recess situated immediately behind the carved ornamental facing over the entrance door of the summer-house. In this there is a narrow chink or peephole from which the fugitive could keep on the lookout either for danger or for the friendly royalist agent of the King's Arms. When it was first discovered, there were evidences of its last occupant, that is, a Jacobean horn tumbler, a mattress, and a handsomely worked velvet pillow. The last two articles, provided no doubt for the comfort of some hunted cavalier, upon being handled, fell to pieces. It may be mentioned that the inner door of the cupboard can be securely fastened from the inside by an iron hook and staple for that purpose. Hewitt, mine host of the King's Arms, was not idle at the time transactions were in progress to transfer Charles II from Trent to Heale, and received within his house Lord Wilmot, Colonel Phelips, and other of the King's friends who were actively engaged in making preparations for the memorable journey. This old inn, with its oak-panelled rooms and rambling corridors, makes a very suitable neighbour to the more dignified old brick mansion opposite, with which it is so closely associated. Many are the exciting stories related of the defeated royalists, especially after the Worcester fight. One of them, Lord Talbot, hastened to his paternal home of Longford near Newport, Salop, and had just time to conceal himself ere his pursuers arrived, who, finding his horse saddled, concluded that the rider could not be far off. They therefore searched the house minutely for 4 or 5 days, and the fugitive would have perished for want of food had not one of the servants contrived at great personal risk to pay him nocturnal visits and supply him with nourishment. The grey old Jacobean mansion, Chastleton, preserves in its oak-panelled hall the sword and portrait of the gallant cavalier Captain Arthur Jones, who, narrowly escaping from the battlefield, speeded homewards with some of Cromwell's soldiers at his heels, and his wife, a lady of great courage, had scarcely concealed him in the secret chamber when the enemy arrived to search the house. Little daunted, the lady, with great presence of mind, made no objection whatever, indeed facilitated their operations by personally conducting them over the mansion. Here, as in so many other instances, the secret room was entered from the principal bedroom, and in inspecting the latter, the suspicion of the Roundheads was in some way or another aroused, so here they determined to remain for the rest of the night. An ample supper, and a good store of wine, which, by the way, had been carefully drugged, was sent up to the unwelcome visitors, and in due course the drink effected its purpose. Its victims dropped off one by one, until the whole party lay like logs upon the floor. Mrs. Arthur Jones then crept in, having even to step over the bodies of the inanimate roundheads, released her husband, and a fresh horse being in readiness, by the time the effects of the wine had worn off, the royalist captain was far beyond their reach. The secret room is located in the front of the building, and has now been converted into a very comfortable little dressing-room, preserving its original oak panelling, and otherwise but little altered, with the exception of the entry to it, which is now an ordinary door. Chastleton is the beau ideal of an ancestral hall. The grand old gabled house, with its lofty square towers, its Jacobean entrance gateway and dovecote, and the fantastically clipped box-trees and sundial of its quaint old-fashioned garden, possesses a charm which few other ancient mansions can boast. And this charm lies in its perfectly unaltered state throughout, even to the minutest detail. Interior and exterior alike, everything presents an appearance exactly as it did when it was erected and furnished by Walter Jones, Esquire, between the years 1603 and 1630. The estate originally was held by Robert Catesby, who sold the house to provide funds for carrying on the notorious conspiracy. Among its most valued relics is a Bible given by Charles I, when on the scaffold, to Bishop Juxon, who lived at Little Compton Manor House, near Chastleton. This Bible was always used by the bishop at the divine services, which at one time were held in the great hall of the latter house. Other relics of the martyr king used to be at Little Compton, that is, some beams of the Whitehall scaffold, whose exact position has occasioned so much controversy. The velvet armchair and footstool used by the king during his memorable trial were also preserved here, but of late years have found a home at Moreton in the Marsh, some 6 miles away. Visitors to that interesting collection, shown in London some years ago, the Stuart Exhibition, may remember this venerable armchair of such sad association. It may be here stated that after Charles I's execution, Juxon lived for a time in Sussex at an old mansion still extant, Albourne Place, not far from Hurstpierpoint. We mention this from the fact that a priest's hole was discovered there some few years ago. It was found in opening a communication between two rooms, and originally it could only be reached by steps projecting from the inner walls of a chimney. Not many miles from Albourne stands Street Place, an Elizabethan Sussex house of some note. A remarkable story of cavalier hunting is told here. A hiding place is said to have existed in the wide open fireplace of the great hall. Tradition has it that a horseman, hard pressed by the parliamentary troopers, galloped into this hall, but upon the arrival of his pursuers, no clue could be found of either man or horse. The gallant Prince Rupert himself, upon one occasion, is said to have had recourse to a hiding hole, at least so the story runs, at the beautiful old black and white timber mansion, Park Hall, near Oswestry. A certain false floor which led to it is pointed out in a cupboard of a bedroom, the hiding-place itself being situated immediately above the dining-room fireplace. A concealed chamber, something after the same description, is to be seen at the old seat of the Fenwicks, Wallington, in Northumberland. A small room, 8 feet long by 16 feet high, situated at the back of the dining-room fireplace, and approached through the back of a cupboard. Behind one of the large panels of the hall of an old building in Warwick, called St. John's Hospital, is a hiding-place, and in a bedroom of the same house there is a little apartment, now converted into a dressing-room, which formerly could only be reached through a sliding panel over the fireplace. The manor-house of Dinsdale-on-Tees, Durham, has another example, but to reach it, it is necessary to pass through a trap-door in the attics, crawl along under the roof, and drop down into the space in the wall behind a bedroom fireplace, where, for extra security, there is a second trapdoor. Full-length panel portraits of the Salwey family at Stanford Court, Worcestershire, unfortunately burned down in 1882, concealed hidden recesses and screened passages leading up to an exit in the leads of the roof. In one of these recesses, curious 17th-century manuscripts were found, among them the household book of a certain Joyce Jefferies during the Civil War. The old Jacobean mansion, Broughton Hall, Staffordshire, had a curious hiding hole over a fireplace, and situated in the wall between the dining room and the great hall. Over its entrance used to hang a portrait of a man in antique costume, which went by the name of Red Stockings. At Lyme Hall, Cheshire, the ancient seat of the Leys, high up in the wall of the hall is a sombre portrait which by ingenious mechanism swings out of its frame, a fixture, and gives admittance to a room on the first floor, or rather affords a means of looking down into the hall. We mention this portrait more especially because it has been supposed that Scott got his idea here of the ghostly picture which figures in Woodstock. Footnote. A large panel in the long gallery of Hatfield can be pushed aside, giving a view into the great hall, and at Ockwell's and other ancient mansions this device may also be seen. End footnote. A bona fide hiding place, however, is to be seen in another part of the mansion, in a very haunted-looking bedroom called the Knight's Chamber, entered through a trap-door in the floor of a cupboard, with a short flight of steps leading into it. Referring to Scott's novel, a word may be said about Fair Rosamond's famous bower at the old palace of Woodstock, surely the most elaborate and complicated hiding place ever devised. The ruins of the labyrinth leading to the bower existed in Drayton's time, who described them as vaults, arched and walled with stone and brick, almost inextricably wound within one another, by which, if at any time her, Rosamond's, lodging were laid about by the Queen, she might easily avoid peril imminent, and if need be, by secret issues take the air abroad many furlongs about Woodstock. In a survey taken in 1660, it is stated that foundation signs remained about a bowshot southwest of the gate. The form and circuit both of the place and ruins show it to have been a house of one pile, and probably was filled with secret places of recess and avenues to hide or convey away such persons as were not willing to be found if narrowly sought after. Ghostly gambols, such as those actually practised upon the parliamentary commissioners at the old palace of Woodstock, were for years carried on without detection by the servants at the old house of Hinton Ampner, Hampshire, and when it was pulled down in the year 1797, it became very obvious how the mysteries, which gave the house the reputation of being haunted, were managed, for numerous secret stairs and passages, not known to exist, were brought to light, which had offered peculiar facilities for the deception. About the middle of the 18th century, the mansion passed out of the hands of its old possessors, the Stukeleys, and shortly afterwards became notorious for the unaccountable noises which disturbed the peace of mind of the new tenants. Not only were there violent knocks, hammerings, groanings, and sounds of footsteps in the ceilings and walls, but strange sights frightened the servants out of their wits. A ghostly visitant dressed in drab would appear, and disappear mysteriously. A female figure was often seen to rush through the apartments, and other supernatural occurrences at length became so intolerable that the inmates of the house sought refuge in flight. Later successive tenants fared the same. £100 reward was offered to any who should run the ghosts to earth, but nothing resulted from it, and after 30 years or more of hauntings, the house was razed to the ground. Secret passages and chambers were then brought to light, but those who had carried on their deception for so long took the secret with them to their graves. Footnote. A full account of the supernatural occurrences at Hinton Ampner will be found in the Life of Richard Barham. End footnote. It is well known that the huge carved oak bedsteads of the 16th and 17th centuries were often provided with secret accommodation for valuables. One particular instance we can call to mind of a hidden cupboard at the base of the bedpost which contained a short rapier. But of these small hiding places we shall speak presently. It is with the head of the bed we shall have now to do, as it was sometimes used as an opening into the wall at the back. Occasionally in old houses, unmeaning gaps and spaces are met with in the upper rooms midway between floor and ceiling, which possibly at one time were used as bedhead hiding places. Shipton Court, Oxon, and Hill Hall, Essex, may be given as examples. Dunster Castle, Somersetshire, also has at the back of a bedstead in one of the rooms a long, narrow place of concealment, extending the width of the apartment, and provided with a stone seat. Sir Ralph Verney, while in exile in France in 1645, wrote to his brother at Claydon House, Buckinghamshire, concerning the odd things in the room my mother kept herself, the iron chest in the little room between her bed's head and the back stairs. This old seat of the Verneys had another secret chamber in the middle story, entered through a trap-door in the muniment room at the top of the house. Here also was a small private staircase in the wall, possibly the back stairs mentioned in Sir Ralph's letters. Before the breaking out of the Civil War, Hampden, Pym, Lord Brooke, and others of the parliamentary leaders held secret meetings at Broughton Castle, Oxon, the seat of Lord Say and Seal, to organise a resistance to the arbitrary measures of the king. In this beautiful old fortified and moated mansion, the secret stairs may yet be seen that led up to the little isolated chamber with massive casemated walls for the exclusion of sound. Anthony Wood, alluding to the secret councils, says, "Several years before the Civil War began, Lord Say, being looked upon as the godfather of that party, had meetings of them in his house at Broughton, where there was a room and passage thereunto, which his servants were prohibited to come near. There is also a hiding-hole behind a window-shutter in the wall of a corridor, with an air-hole ingeniously devised in the masonry." The old dower house of Fawsley, not many miles to the northeast of Broughton, in the adjoining county of Northamptonshire, had a secret room over the hall, where a private press was kept for the purpose of printing political tracts at this time, when the country was working up into a state of turmoil. When the regicides were being hunted out in the early part of Charles II's reign, Judge Mayne secreted himself at his house, Dinton Hall, Bucks, but eventually gave himself up. The hiding-hole at Dinton was beneath the staircase, and accessible by removing three of the steps. A narrow passage which led from it to a space behind the beams of the roof had its sides or walls thickly lined with cloth, so as to muffle all sound. Footnote: there is a tradition that it was a servant of Mayne who acted as Charles I's executioner. End footnote. Bradshaw Hall, in north-west Derbyshire, once the seat of the family of that name, of which the notorious president was a member, has or had a concealed chamber high up in the wall of a room on the ground floor, which was capable of holding three persons. Of course, tradition says the wicked judge was hidden here. The regicides, Colonels Whaley and Gough, had many narrow escapes in America, whither they were traced. What is known as Judge's Cave in the West Rock, some 2 miles from the town of New Haven, Connecticut, afforded them sanctuary. For some days they were concealed in an old house belonging to a certain Mrs. Ayers, in a secret chamber behind the wainscoting, the entrance to which was most ingeniously devised. The house was narrowly searched on May the 14th, 1661, at the time they were in hiding. Upon the discovery of the Rye House plot in 1683, suspicion falling upon one of the conspirators, William, 3rd Lord Howard of Escrick, the sergeant-at-arms was dispatched with a squadron of horse to his house at Knightsbridge, and after a long search he was discovered, concealed in a hiding-place constructed in a chimney at the back of a tall cupboard, and the chances are that he would not have been arrested had it not been evident by the warmth of his bed and his clothes scattered about that he had only just risen and could not have got away unobserved, except to some concealed lurking-place. When discovered, he had on no clothing beyond his shirt, so it may be imagined with what precipitate haste he had to hide himself upon the unexpected arrival of the soldiers. Numerous other houses were searched for arms and suspicious papers, particularly in the counties of Cheshire and Lancashire, where the Duke of Monmouth was known to have many influential friends, marked enemies to the throne. Monmouth's lurking place was known at Whitehall, and those who revealed it went the wrong way to work to win court favour. Apart from the attractions of Lady Wentworth, whose companionship made the fugitives' enforced seclusion at Toddington in Bedfordshire far from tedious, the mansion was desirable at that particular time on account of its hiding facilities. An anonymous letter sent to the Secretary of State failed not to point out that vastness and intricacy that without a most diligent search it's impossible to discover all the lurking holes in it, there being several trap-doors on the leads and in closets, into places to which there is no other access. The easy-going king had to make some external show towards an attempt to capture his erring son. Therefore instructions were given with this purpose, but to a courtier and diplomatist who valued his own interests. Toddington Place, therefore, was not explored. Few hiding places are associated with so tragic a story as that at Moyle's Court, Hants, where the venerable Lady Alice Lisle, in pure charity, hid two partisans of Monmouth, John Hicks and Richard Nelthorpe, after the Battle of Sedgemoor, for which humane action she was condemned to be burned alive by Judge Jeffreys, a sentence commuted afterwards to beheading. It is difficult to associate this peaceful old Jacobean mansion and the simple tomb in the churchyard hard by with so terrible a history. A dark hole in the wall of the kitchen is traditionally said to be the place of concealment of the fugitives who threw themselves on Lady Alice's mercy, but a dungeon-like cellar, not unlike that represented in E.M. Ward's well-known picture, looks a much more likely place. It was in an underground vault at Lady Place, Hurley, the old seat of the Lovelaces, that secret conferences were held by the adherents of the Prince of Orange. 3 years after the execution of the Duke of Monmouth, his boon companion and supporter, John, Third Lord Lovelace, organized treasonable meetings in this tomb-like chamber. Tradition asserts that certain important documents in favour of the revolution were actually signed in the Hurley vault. Be this as it may, King William III failed not in after years, when visiting his former secret agent, to inspect the subterranean apartment with very tender regard. End of chapter 8.